Welcome to Dopey, the podcast on drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. And my name is Dave. And on Thursdays, we now do the Dopey Retro Replay. Basically, there's so many. Listen, people can complain. People aren't complaining. I'm complaining that I'm doing too much work. I'm putting too much content up. But it makes me realize how proud I am of Dopey. And I'm really, really proud of Dopey Thursday. And just to catch you up, just in case you're confused, the way Dopey is going down, at least for the month of December of 2025, Monday is the replay. So last Monday, we replayed the lovely and talented Charlotte McKinney. Tuesday is Patreon, and we do the teaser. We did the teaser with Cormac and the heavy-breathing Selby, plus one of my proto fake meditations. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to the Tuesday teaser. Yesterday, we had Jason Williamson on the Wednesday dose of Dopey from the Sleaford Mods. Thursday, we have the Dopey fucking, I think we're calling it Retro Replay, but it's really Dopey's greatest hits, which I'm so proud of. And Friday, we have the new show. And this Friday, we have a fucking classic Hall of Fame Dopey fucko from Long Island, Harry Tung Will, which I'm very excited for. But Thursday is a very special day, and it's the day that we play some of the greatest shows in Dopey history. Last week we did Caroline Mountain Girl Garcia, and I got some great Spotify comments. I really suggest you guys leave comments on Spotify. If you do, and I read them, which I will, and you want stickers, I'll send you stickers. So if you hear your comment on Spotify, write a little note to dopeypodcast@gmail.com or send a little voicemail, and I'll fucking send you stickers. I might even send you stocks. Socks. All right. Stephen Doyle says, not only, and this is about the Carolyn Mountain Girl Garcia, not only one of the best episodes of Dopey. This is like the greatest comment we've ever gotten. But this is even a bona fide historical document concerning the woman's experience of the beat movement on Ken Kesey and on Jerry Garcia. I wouldn't be surprised to see this episode used as a source and turn up in the bibliography of future biographies and history books. God damn, what a great comment. And you can sense Dave's giddiness as he's such a fanboy of all those involved. It's true. I was very giddy. Andrea says, great interview. Thanks for sharing again. I haven't heard this previously. And this is why we're doing the Thursday thing, because so many people never heard it, and now they hear it. This is Number Sign says, hey, Dave, love the show. I must be concise because my messages don't seem to send if they're too long. Two books you must check out. One is Apathy for the Devil, and the other is The Dark Stuff. I've read The Dark Stuff. Oh, I think I read Apathy for the Devil. Both books are Nick Kent. Check them out. I know you will dig them. Mark from Southwestern Australia. I think Nick Kent is alive. Alive and well, living in New Jersey. And we need to get him on the show, Nick Kent. I think Sid Vicious did something to him. Something notable. I forgot what it was. Hazel Hot Sausages says, she can't share a prank on Dopey. Okay. And Waylon Fingers, the flat picker, says, heck yeah, thanks. These are great comments. Today on the Thursday Greatest Hits, Retro Roundup, whatever you want to call it, replay, I decided to go to Patreon and ask what they wanted to hear. We also did the Patreon Zoom, and I heard from a few people, everybody loved when Chris told his prison stories. We did two episodes totally centered around Chris's prison stories. The one we're going to play is the first one. We ran a poll on Patreon to figure out which episode to play, and we came up with Chris's prison stories part one. We're going to have inserted ads in this if you want to listen to it without inserted ads, and you can hear every show we've ever done without inserted ads by joining Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/dopeypodcast. for the $8 tier, you get all the shows without ads, plus you get the Recovery Zoom on Wednesdays, the Patreon Zoom, and a shit ton of stickers. For $5, you don't get the inserted ads, but you get a free show on Tuesday. You don't want to hear all this. $10, you get more stickers. $15, you get socks. $20, you get beanie. And you get to be part of our little Patreon world. And now the Patreon world has selected Chris's Prison Stories to be the Thursday Retro Replay Greatest Hit Show. So this, and I need to say this, it's fucked up how painful it always is to think of Chris. And if you didn't know who Chris was, I met Chris in Canaan, Connecticut at Mountainside Recovery in May of 2011. I got there on May 1st. Chris was there. We became friends. He was a weirdo. He was incredibly smart and funny. And we started this podcast, Dopey, in 2015. First episode, they say, is 2016. I think we started it in 2015. I was a few months sober, and Chris was like a year and a half sober. We did the show for 2.5 years, and Chris relapsed, and he overdosed, and he died. And there are 142 episodes of me and Chris having fun, making fun of each other, Chris schooling me on recovery, Chris schooling me on drugs, addiction, and dumb shit, and more than anything else, just loving each other and having the best time. So this was, I think, the last, we used to record 4 episodes in a night. This, I think, was the last episode that night, and Chris was incredibly excited to do it. I haven't listened to this episode in ages, so I just put it on, and I say horrible things. Me and Chris are exhausted. I say ridiculously offensive, cringy things. So I want to warn you guys. Also, my dad calls in, and it's an early episode of Dopey. This is from 2016, episode 67. Chris chose some like gangster rap music to start it off also. It's totally, I don't remember it, but this is what the patrons chose. This is Dopey 67, Chris's Prison Stories Part 1. And if you want to pick next week's show, join Patreon or send in an email to dopeypodcast@gmail.com. And here's me and Chris.
Hello and welcome to Dopey, the podcast about anger and sadness and lonely, lonely spaces.
Dave is such a piece of shit. We literally had to re-record the intro 3 times because he didn't like
it was really
something. What didn't you like about it?
I didn't like you. That was the thing I didn't like. I didn't like you.
This is a late night, tired,
cranky
episode of Dopey, because we've been going hard and going strong. I'm kind of in that weird space, yes, where I think it's going to be fully authentic.
Listen,
more authentic than before.
How would you describe Dopey?
It's a podcast about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit.
Would you say it's
what? You know what I say to people when it's like somebody that like I'm like, I don't know if I should tell them about this. I'm like, there's hundreds of recovery-centric shows out there, and we try to appeal to a different demographic than the more traditional podcasts about drugs and alcohol.
Do you know what I say? I say, I have this podcast. It's called Dopey. It's retarded.
Boy, Dave wanted our tagline to be, he literally thought that this one should be, it should be Dopey. It's retarded. He wanted to make stickers and t-shirts, and I'm like, dude, we can't do that.
I still believe that. We should have like some like retarded kid eating cereal, and then it's like, Dopey, it's retarded.
Dave's so disgusting. I got a box of some beautiful organic blueberry clusters, Kashi cereal for tomorrow. And he just opens it up with his grubby little paws that he smokes cigarettes with all day and probably does other things and just eats it.
What kind of other things are you implying I do?
You know which things like I'm what? Talking about.
Like what?
The things you use your other laptop for. Your second laptop.
I don't use it anymore. So what? What's your problem?
My problem is you just help yourself to my my organic.
You offered it to me before. You said, I have some cereal. Do you want some?
Yeah, like have a cereal with a bowl and a spoon, not just open it up and
I said, Chris, you made coffee? He said, yeah, but don't use too much milk because I'm going to eat cereal later.
And it's a small bottle of milk. Did you see it?
It's not a bottle, number one. It's a container of milk. And number two, you knew I was coming. Why didn't you get enough milk for the both of us?
Because I thought that the small one would make it till tomorrow.
Who's the piece of shit in that scenario?
I am. I'm a piece of shit.
Don't be so hard on yourself, man. Don't be so hard on yourself.
All right, so what's the agenda? Is your pops calling in?
Might as
well.
We
got two things to do right now. We're going to do a jail episode, which I have never done on Dopey, where I'm going to delve deep into my jail experiences, which aren't necessarily about drugs and alcohol. A couple of them are, but they're very, very crazy and very, very wild. And I hope nobody ever listens to them that I know.
Well, you invite all your Facebook friends to like Dopey.
No, I invite certain ones.
Certain?
Certain.
Which certain ones do you invite up to your room?
Room.
I invite certain friends up to my room. And we drink rum.
So
do you ever say, when you were active, did you say, I have a bottle of rum, do you want to come up to my room and enjoy it?
Is it really that bad?
Dude, say room.
I remember I got mate room. I remember.
No. Say. And the best thing was when he used to come to my apartment, he'd be like, I wasn't sure which room you were in. You wouldn't even go to an apartment.
Well, dude, I remember moving to Arizona because I was born in Boston. Moved to Arizona. I was 18 till I was like 13. And I remember the kids used to make fun of me because I would say things like a little off. And nobody in my family has like a strong – people always say your dad has this like thick Boston accent. But it's never like – it's people who aren't from Boston. He doesn't really have a Boston accent. But there were certain things I said and I remember having to get like kind of like train myself not to say them when I was like 8 or 9 or whatever.
Rum was not one of them.
No, it was. I just never fixed it. Sarah was one.
What
I used
is
to
it?
Say Sarah or something. I
said what the fuck? Who cares the name?
Well, there was probably
Boston accents are so funny. Let me get a Wicked Duck beer.
Shut up, buddy.
You don't want a Wicked Duck beer? I wish I was around more people from Boston so I could do Boston shtick.
Yeah.
I wish I
could. Well, my knucklehead friends, you know, they're from that area.
We should have them call in.
All right. I should have my old sponsor call in. Salty dog. Thick. Boston accent, swears like a madman, was homeless for a period.
We should have him call in. It would be great for the show.
Oh, it'd be great.
Instead, we're going to have my father call in right now. Here we go. You
Where's
ready?
Where's my vape at? It's over there.
Ooh, my back. Hello.
Hey, Dad.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing? I'm all right.
What's the matter?
I was waiting for you to call the whole night.
I texted you 2 hours ago.
Yeah, David, listen, you were supposed to call on the home phone. That's what you said.
No, what we said, first of all, you're on, what's the Yiddish word for complaining? Hello?
Gotcha Megillah.
No, the verb to complain in Yiddish is to...
I didn't think of it all the time.
Kvetch!
Anyway, I was very disappointed that you can't remember what you say to do.
No, you...
I'm not disappointed that I didn't have to get on the show. That's no big deal.
Well, the good news is you're on the show now.
What do you mean? Everybody's listening to what I just said?
Yes, and you've really embarrassed yourself and me, just so you know.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, hi, Chris. No, listen, he tells me he's going to call me, and I'm sitting around waiting, and of course, the Knicks lost in 4 overtimes, and this, whatever this show is going on, President Trump is having another hard day today, giving the rest of the country a hard day. And anyway, and you guys want me to be on the show after he told me that he would never let me be back on the show. So I don't know why all of a sudden he tells me to call up.
Well, after we got that beautiful review, we had to have you back on. Did you read it?
I know. It's the pressure of the Dopey Nation that forced you to have me come on, right? That's the answer.
Well, you were a big hit.
I was a big hit. You got two emails saying it was good. Is that the pressure from the two emails?
I'm sure you wrote both of them.
I didn't write, no. I didn't write any of them. I mean, but I'm glad that one of the guys liked the word turpitude. So I guess that was a big hit.
Still don't know what that means.
It means depravity.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah, exactly.
Dad, first of all, I apologize that you were sitting by the phone waiting for me to call, number one.
Good.
Number two, the idea was that I would text you and then you would call me from the home phone. That was right. My plan.
Chris, this is like how he remembers how I first learned that he took heroin. This is exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but episode you say that I was right. You decide that you were wrong, remember?
Well, I don't remember it at all. No, but I certainly remember today. You said you were going to call me. You said that I shouldn't call because, you know, you didn't know when you wanted.
What time did I text you?
On the phone it says like 8:20 or something.
Exactly. Well, I'm surprised you haven't been on your phone the whole time.
No, I'm not. I was watching the Knick game. Took forever. The last four overtimes of the 1951. I think I remember that game.
And of course they lost.
They lost that one also, by the way.
Listen.
Anyway, well, let me get to the point though. The point that I'm going to make is that on your website, the reviews run by so fast that you can't read them. I mean, it's ridiculous. And of course, you never put up the two good reviews. You know, saying that I had a good call—that was never shown.
Listen, Chris, you want
to
feel this?
Well, just Alan. Anything to do with the website is far beyond the scope and purvey of
purvey.
How do you? What is this?
Purveyance?
I don't know. Of me and Dave. So, I mean, that's our website guy's problem.
Well, that guy is doing a terrible job. Why does it have to scroll? Why can't you just go from one to the other, and if you got tired of reading them, you don't read them anymore?
You know, that's interesting you say that. I think that's actually Chris's responsibility.
No, I think I like the scroll. I just wish it was slower. So I'm with you on the slowing the scroll, Alan. But
I agree. It would be fine if it was slow enough to read it. And also, it seems to put up the podcast reviews randomly, so sometimes it's two or three repeat themselves instantly, and then you don't see the other ones forever.
Alan, what if we just put the review where the guy says the good stuff about you and just have that one scroll continuously?
that sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
Dad, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Are you sitting with the Dopey website on, waiting for the review about you to pop up on the scroll?
No, but I did that I did that three times yesterday. I did it for a total of maybe an hour, like 20 minutes each time. And in each 20 minutes, it never came up at all.
Dad,
never.
You're a wonderful... I love you very much. You're a very sweet man.
Well, anyway, and of course, you announced that you would never have me on the show ever again. So,
I say a lot of stupid stuff. I just figured this was worthy.
You told me to wait for the phone call today. That was pretty stupid, too, yeah.
All right.
Which never came.
Listen.
Anyway, so what?
Chris is going to put everything about you. We're going to have an Alan section on the show. And
you almost said the name, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm tired. I almost said that we're going to have an Alan section to the page. We got to work on that.
All right.
Alan's corner.
Yep.
I don't think Alan's advice. I wanted to bring up this thing about, I mentioned this, that there was a full page ad in the New York Times yesterday about some guy trying to sell some product to take people off Suboxone. Is that the name of that stuff?
Yeah. Was it Kratom or what is it?
I don't know. All I know is that there seems to be, you know, people who get hooked on phony things because they're so, you know, they're so horribly addicted. So they spend money on these cures that may not have any scientific validity whatsoever. I don't know one way or the other, but I guess people could be, you know, like looking for cancer cures and things like that. Anyway,
of course, it's a very vulnerable population, and there's money to be made.
Yeah, but anyway, this guy spent a fortune on a full page ad in the Times.
On an anti-Suboxone ad.
It's probably not kratom, because kratom is just a replacement that's probably going to be illegal soon. But it's probably some bullshit. You're right, Alan. Pardon my French. I know you don't like the language.
Nice going, man. Way to curse at my father.
Listen, your language is your language, and I guess it's appropriate for what you guys are doing, but... And it's not appropriate in some other places.
Is there any other complaint you want to administer before we move on to Chris's stories from jail?
Oh, well, I think I gave you the criticism about the reviews, right? You can't read them because they go too fast.
Dad, why don't you tell Chris the story about when you went to jail?
That wasn't that funny. my friend Richard was doing a project for school, and he was doing a project on the criminal justice system. So he called up the captain at Fort Apache in the Bronx, which may be where Chris was in prison, who knows. He called up the captain at Fort Apache and got permission to film everything from the arrest of the perpetrator to the throwing into prison. So, of course, Richard needed somebody, you know, to be
an actor.
He needed the perp. So he grabs me. We go up to the Bronx. We go to the police station. And, I'm minding my own business. And a policeman gives me some piece of metal. And he tells me to break into this car that's on the corner over there. So I walk over to the car. And I'm trying to figure out how to use this thing to open up the door. And all of a sudden, he says, stop, and he pulls out his gun, points his gun at me, then he handcuffs me, and meanwhile, Richard is filming this whole thing, and then they take me into the police station, and he handcuffs me to this hot pipe, which is burning my hand. Then they take off my belt and my shoelaces, and they throw me into this prison where I think the last inmate had ripped out a toilet, and the prison cell was a disaster. And then they slam the door shut, and they walk away. And I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, yes, I mean, is there anybody coming back? And anyway, I think they left me in there for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and it felt like it was like a year. So that was part of me being arrested. And actually, I found the picture of it. Oh, yeah, David, you saw it, right?
I don't know. But, Chris was actually in prison for a year.
And it felt like 5 minutes.
Well, it was the quickest year he ever did.
What do you mean? He did more than 1 year? He did more than a year. But
this is a good segue.
This is a good segue, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, you should send me the picture of you in the jail.
We'll post it on Instagram.
We'll put it on the Dopey Instagram page.
Well, why would you guys have to be, you guys are kept secret, but you're going to put my picture out there?
We'll cover your face.
We'll dopey up.
The listeners want more personal stuff. This sounds like it could really fit the bill.
I should tell you that story about when Richard filmed, me and my friend the congressman, and that was a funny story also. But anyway, go ahead. Chris in prison? That's all right. I guess you're going to tell the story.
It's going to be bad. I wouldn't listen to this episode.
Anyway, is this episode? It's going to be on like in 3 or 4 weeks, though, right?
Yeah.
In 2 weeks.
Drive home carefully. Be careful. Goodbye, Chris. Good night.
Dad. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
I love you. Sorry you had to wait by the phone looking for your review and all that stuff.
You're going to put the review on so the rest of the people could see it?
Everybody else knows how to go on iTunes and just read it.
Well, I don't have that iTunes.
You can go on iTunes with a Samsung phone. You really can. You just have to go on iTunes.com.
All right. All right, thanks for telling me. All right, so goodbye. Good night, both of you guys. Love to both of you, by the way.
All right, Dad. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Good night, Alan.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night, sister. Bye-bye.
Your dad rocks. He's a good man.
He is.
Just like a good-hearted, nice man.
He really is. You see how upset he was, though? He's sitting by the phone. I'm texting him. He doesn't look at his phone. He's on his phone all day, every day. He doesn't look at
he's
it.
He's just sitting next to
did
his
did you see how angry he was erect. In the beginning?
Yeah.
He was so mad. I felt like I was on drugs. I felt like I was in big trouble.
Yeah.
Did you hear him?
Yeah, I did. I could pick up on it.
He was upset.
Yeah, but I mean, they have people listening probably don't understand because they don't know your dad. I mean, he doesn't. When he's upset, it's a mild mannered upsetness.
Well, sometimes. Anyway, now we're going to segue from my father's fake jail story to your very real tales from prison.
I don't know if I have the energy to do this right now.
Well, what else are we going to do?
Takes a lot out of me. All right, listen. So we'll tell a few stories. I'm going to start with. First time I did real time, what happened? We'll go into some riots and stuff.
How about the first time you texted with Big Time?
Big Time. We got to get him on, man. Big Time and exclusive. So, we'll do that one. And then I'll do when I shot meth in jail.
With the binky?
With the binky, which I've talked about on the show. But, I mean, I should add that. And time I got out. Yeah, I'll just tell some stories. So, I'll start with the first time I ever did time. And so I had been to jail before after I robbed a veterinarian, but I got bailed out and I fought this case for years, you know what I mean? Then I finally went down.
Oh, the old phenobarbital story.
The phenobarbital story. So, but I finally went down and did some time. And there's a huge story with that, which I've told twice. So I'm not going to tell that one again. But I went in for the first time and I was doing 6 months. And supposed to do 4 months and 6 months, but I ended up doing like almost five because actually there was a fuck up in the court system and I ended up doing more time because of it. But I came in, it's the first time I'm really spending time in jail, you know, more than like a couple days. And I go in and they're fingerprinting me. And I have on my record, my charges were a robbery and a strong arm robbery, no weapon involved. A robbery, which is like a burglary, except you use force, right? So like I took something like in front of somebody, like I'm taking this, you know, for the veterinarian clinic and the phenobarbital. It was actually phenobutazone. But so I have a robbery on my charge list and I have 4 assaults on police officers, a great bodily injury on police officers, a commercial burglary, a battery, and possession of a controlled substance. And all this shit.
Was the controlled substance the phenobutazole?
No, it was Norco's that I had on me for no prescription. So anyways, I...
You had the Norco's and you wanted more.
Yeah, I didn't know what the fuck was going on. So anyways, though, but I have the great bodily injury on the cop and the 4 assaults on the police officer. I like nothing, dude. He tried to retire from the force saying I hurt him and he couldn't like be, I definitely like did something and like, I'm not exonerating myself. I'm definitely like a guilty person in the sense that like I attacked the police, but like he wasn't hurt, you know? And it,
did your parents' lawyer ever go after him for lying or for exaggerating?
No, they don't care about that stuff, but I got that charge dismissed. But so anyway, so I have all this shit. And so the guards, they see that and they're going to beat you up because of it. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Like
you have
you're assault. A public enemy number one. Yeah. You've messed with a brother in blue.
Yeah. So like I didn't fucking understand. I go to get fingerprint. There's this thing called the loop. And there's just like every day. This is Orange County Jail in California, which is 5,500 people. It's one of the largest county jails in the country. And you hear Orange County, you think, oh, Newport Beach, like Laguna Bay. There's a lot of shitty places in Orange County. You know what I mean? It's like a pretty big, can be pretty tough jail. It's actually good if you're white because the Mexicans, the Sureños, the Southsiders, they run the jail. So, and the whites are allied with the Mexicans. You go to LA County and the blacks run it. And so it's a little bit more chaotic.
Why do you suppose the Sureños and the Woods or the white people are?
That's just how it is. South of Sacramento is Sureños and they're allied with the Woods, the white people, and then north of Sacramento is the Norteños and the Northsiders, and they're allied with the blacks. I don't get it.
So who's allied with the whites north of San Diego?
It's once you go to prison, you go all over the state, so it doesn't matter. So it's just always the whites are allied with the Sureños, and the blacks are allied with the Norteños. But
so how do the Norteños and the Sureños get along?
But,
They don't. They're enemies. But if you're in Orange County Jail, it's all Serranos because the Norteños are up north. But once you go to prison, then everybody crosses and mixes around the state. You understand?
So do ever Norteños try to pass for Serranos when they're down south?
No, Norteños have long hair and Serranos bick their head. So you can even just tell looking at them.
So what if you're a Norteño and you decide to shave your head to fit in?
You wouldn't.
You'd never get away.
I mean,
with
I
it.
Guess, no, you Norteños, you'd have to rep. Like, I don't know, man. That'd be tough if you're Norteño down there.
I bet you it happens all the time.
I don't think it happens all the time because I never saw any.
You wouldn't know because they'd shave their
head. Oh, to blend in. Yeah, but they'd be like, what gang are you from? Where you'd know, like, they'd know.
What up, vato?
Yeah.
How you doing,
say,
Holmes?
Cubo vato. Cubo lo hijo. Say, pinche puto.
What's pinche?
I don't know. Pinche puto, paisano.
Puedo obtener un orden de papas, por favor?
Órale,
you know what
homie.
That means?
Simón.
You know what this means?
What?
Puedo obtener un orden de papas.
You ought cabrón. To have some potatoes?
Can you give me an order of French fries, cocksucker?
Oh. Maricón. So anyways, so I go in and I'm going through the loop, getting processed, which takes like a day, takes forever. And they go to fingerprint me and I'm going up and the guards are all fucking juiced out and angry and like.
Juiced out?
Yeah, a lot of them do steroids and they're like, there's like a lot of abuse, at least in Orange County, with the sheriffs on the inmates. And so I go up and I'm like kind of fucked up. You know, I just ran out of treatment and like. And a bunch of shit happened. But anyways, I'm going in to do my first sentence, and it's 6 months in jail, and then once I get out, I have to go to rehab for a year, court-ordered, and then 5 years probation, which is a fucking great deal for those charges. It took 2 years to get that deal. And so they go to fingerprint me, and I'm holding it, and they don't do, like, the ink fingerprints anymore. They have this, like, electronic scanner. And they roll your hand along the scanner. And so they hold your hand, they hold your wrist like really fucking tight. And he's squeezing my wrist and he's rolling my fingers. And he keeps telling me, stop resisting. And I'm like, what? And like, he's like, stop resisting. And he like, I'm like, I'm not. And then he just yells at us, stop resisting. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then he says it one more time. And then they take and throw me against the glass, grab the back of my head and slam my face against the plexiglass. Like, fuck, dude, it fucking hurt. And then just twist you up and then they do this like weird twisting shit with your fingers and stuff. And so they're just, like, attacking me and I have fucking no clue what's going on. I didn't know it was because of my charges. I thought it was because I was doing something wrong with the fingerprint.
Were you scared?
I was more bewildered that I was like, I'm
you
not.
You fucked this up.
I was like, I'm
I fucked up the fingerprints. What's going to happen when I get to the bed?
Yeah, I was like, I'm not resisting. You know what I mean? So then they fucking throw me in the cell. They let me sit in there for like another 6 hours. You know, it was just miserable in the loop. And they go back, and it was so funny. They go back to fingerprint me again. And I had the loosest, most non-resistant fingers in the world, you know? And they fingerprint me. And then they send you to classification, and I'm in classification, and the guy's like, he's like, I'm putting you, he's like, you're going to be an orange bander. He's like, I'm putting you basically in a higher classification. So the jail is, it's 80% like white banders, which is general population, and then probably like 15% orange banders, or yeah, I'm sorry, maybe a yellow bander, 15% yellow banders, which is people who have done a lot of prison time, almost exclusively people who have been in prison a lot or have violent charges. And then it's like 3% orange banders, which is like
murderers and rapists. And
yep. And then like 1% red banders and 1% blue banders. Red banders you never even see. They're going away for life, death row, basically. Blue banders is protective custody. And then orange banders is high-powered gang members usually.
Right, but so, do you think they gave you cred by giving you the yellow?
No, so band. This is what happens. So I go to fucking, I go, he makes me an orange bander. It's all cell.
Yellow bander.
I mean, yellow, I'm sorry, yellow bander. And I have some good orange banding stories too. I'll get to it. So he makes me, and you don't see the orange banders usually too. And so he makes me a yellow bander. And I'm sent to this higher classification. It's only cell living, no dorms. And I go in and I'm in a 4-man cell, which is like so fucking tiny. Never done any real time. And I go in and like I'm on the top bunk and I go to like make my bed and they can just fucking tell the way you make your bed like you've never done time and every single person on the tier has done tons of time. You know, and I'm like fucking new fish, don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And
do they say new fish on the floor?
What they would say that in the dorms when people would come in and say new fish. Here it was like much chiller because it's all the things. But my bunkie, I remember his name was Justin Krause, it was the first time I was in there and he he was the shot caller for the Woods. And this is a small tier, only like 32 people in the tier. So, but the shot caller, the rep, for people listening, it's like the person in charge of that race. So this jail,
Orange County. Are you still friends with Justin Krause on Facebook?
I tried friending it. He actually ended up going to prison circuitously years later because of me. I gave him a bunch of syringes. We met like years later outside of jail. He beat somebody up and then got caught with the syringes, and it violated his parole and he served his sentence. So anyways, I'm in this fucking cell, and I'm being funny and trying to make people laugh, and like and this guy at the, this is the first time, I mean, it took me about a day to get here, but it's my first night in my actual like lodgings, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's this guy at the end of the tier, and he's yelling, his name is Olson. I still remember this is his first night. He yells, fuck the niggers, fuck the spicks, fuck the red and white, like all this shit, right?
What's the red and white?
Red and white is the Hell's Angels. And so, and he's a white guy, and I haven't even seen him. He's in cell four, I'm in cell one, and it's all along a tier, a hallway. So I just hear him yelling that. And so basically what happens is a white guy, since he's white, has to beat him up, because since he's insulting other races, it could cause a race riot.
Right.
So the shot caller's like, fuck this fucking Olson. Like, now I got it. Because the shot caller, it's his duty to take care of it, you know? And he's like, I got to fucking do something. And he turns to me. He's like, hey, like, new fish. He's like, you want to be my falcon? He's like, oh, you want to take care of this guy for me? And I'm like, yeah, like, why not? Like, sure. And I was like, and I'm fucking terrified, dude. It was the first night. And I'm like,
The first night he asked you to be the fucking,
I've been there for 3 hours, right?
You will be my falcon.
Yeah.
And I will
he
be
was a fucking really funny
the
guy.
Falconer.
He had a swastika on his arm. And I was like, later on I asked him, he was in AA for years and he got sober. And I asked him what that's about, because he didn't seem like a racist person. And I guess he just like threw a bunch of tattoo art in the air at this tattoo parlor, and whatever landed, he was going to get. And the swastika landed somewhere, and he got it because that's what he said. But that was his story, at least. So anyways, he's like, I'm like, yeah, I'll fucking do it. I was like, what do I need to do? And he's like, well, he's like, when they pop the doors for chow tomorrow morning, he's like, just run down, beat him up, and then take his bed, his mattress, and throw it out on the tier. And he's like, I'll handle the rest. And what happens is the shot caller is actually friends with the guards, and they'll go up to the guards and be like, look, you got to roll Olson out. He's causing trouble. It's going to create a riot. And the guards will actually listen to the shot caller, because they just want to fucking sit and watch TV. They don't want riots going off, because the shot callers actually try to keep the peace. So they actually work with the guards, right? So I'm like, who is he? He's like, big guy with the beard, cell four. I'm like, all right. Like, so I sit on my bunk, and all fucking night I don't go to sleep. I'm like sitting Indian side on my bunk, like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into? And like, you know,
how long you'd been clean at that point?
I'd use that day. I'd use before, literally right before I went in. I'd use
heroin.
I had used heroin and ecstasy for, I don't know why. I feel like ecstasy's in my stories a lot. I didn't really use a lot, but for some reason I had used ecstasy that day.
So you're
but like 24 hours ago at this point.
So you're starting to, you're maybe a little twitchy.
I was so on, just because I was like, it was the first time, and I was like, you're going to have to sit up a little bit. I don't think they can hear you like that. You're not going to sit up? It's fine. I'll angle the mic to your microphone. Dave's laying down on the couch and is just checked out.
I'm here.
All right. So fucking, where am I at this story? Okay, so I'm on the bunk all fucking night, right?
But I'm asking if you're twitchy and like some sort of pseudo withdrawal.
No, I was so amped up about, I think, what was going on that nothing touched me, you know?
Oh, man. That would be so scary.
And I had been using a lot. I had ran out of treatment and used for a few days.
How many people would you say at that point in your life you'd beaten up?
I wasn't like a huge fighter. I'd gotten in fights, though. Yeah, for sure.
Have you ever had to beat somebody up?
What does that mean?
Like in private school, I can
imagine.
Yeah,
we would go out and get in like fights sometimes. But it was like we were drunk and we did it at like parties.
But you would find some kid and you'd be like, hey, homie, I need you to rub out Chad over there. And you'd be like, all right, I'm going to kick his ass and throw his bed into the hall. I mean, have you ever had to target somebody and fucking rough them up?
No, nothing like that. Yeah. No, nothing.
So I mean, that must be a fucking scary scenario. You've never done anything like that.
I was terrified. I was fucking
shitting in my pants.
What were you
thinking? Were you thinking I'm
going to
tap him on the shoulder and punch him in the face?
I didn't know. I was so scared, dude. I sat on my bunk the whole night and didn't go to sleep.
So the next morning, chow's at like 5 a.m. You're waiting, and this is old school. This isn't plexiglass. There's like three jails.
What do they serve for chow?
It's actually really well balanced meals. They're just not very caloric. You get like everything. You get like an orange and oatmeal and like bread. You always get like three pieces of bread. You get like a carton of milk.
Did you like calling it chow instead of breakfast?
You have to just eat, dude. They give you like 2 minutes to eat if you go to chow hall. Eventually, I was in a cell where they deliver the food to you. But
anyway, so that's chow time.
Yeah, so the chow time. What happens is chow time. Everybody stands and waits in their cell for the door to open. And they pop the door open. You go out. You take a left on the tier and you walk down to go to chow. And so, and then you eat immediately and go right back to your cell and then go back to sleep. And so I'm fucking standing first person in the door, and then there's three people behind me in the cell, the shot caller and then the two other guys. And I'm fucking terrified. I'm like, what the fuck? I go beat up Olsen. And they roll the doors open for chow. I run out to the right, and I'm not running down the tier, but I'm like walking briskly, you know what I mean? Because like if you run, then they're going to know something's up. And the fucking guy, Justin, the shot caller, my bunkie, passes me. And he runs into cell four where Olsen was. And the other dudes that were with Olsen, his other three cellmates, immediately run out of the cell. I don't know what the fuck's going on because these guys have done so much time. They just knew the deal. They knew what was happening.
Right.
And so they immediately
exit. They probably knew it was going to happen the second this guy said it.
Yeah. So they immediately run out. Justin goes in first, and I go behind Justin. He just fucking wallops him once on the side of the face. Justin, the other guy, hits him. The guy immediately balls up on his bunk, you know what I mean? Like puts his hand over his thing, and Justin just starts wailing him, like punching on him. I literally sneak one weak ass girly punch like around Justin and like tap the guy on the back. I do nothing, like at all, right? And then we come out on the tier. And everybody's like, yeah.
New fish.
Everybody's like, good job. I was like, it just like worked out very nicely in my favor. And I think through my bunkie, I think he knew how nervous I was. And he was actually like a decent guy.
So what would you say? Did you say, yeah, I kicked the shit out of him? I
didn't say anything. And then it actually got, and then they got a little, I didn't understand. I was only in that cell for like 2 weeks, and then they moved me somewhere.
That must have been a good cell, though, because the guy was a good guy. He's a shot caller.
Nah,
he's looking
out
for you.
There was some drama with the other guy in the cell, which I think he was older. He'd been in like fucking level 4 yards. There's another guy that was in the cell who didn't step up. This older guy. He'd been level four yards. It's like no hands policy, meaning if you get in a fight with somebody, you stab them. There's no fighting with hands. And so he'd done time like that. And I think he got like resentful that.
Why?
What do you mean?
Like, why?
He was classified at such a high level.
No.
Oh, why level? Because it's like, we don't want any little shit. Like, it's not like little bickering. We're going to go out and fight with it. It's like, if you have an issue, you take it to the point where you stab somebody. Right. So that actually keeps a peace.
Do they call it shanking or stabbing?
It's shanking someone. But it actually keeps a certain level of peace because it's like, we're going to work this shit out or it's going to be next level stuff. So anyways, this guy had done time like that. And I think he started to resent me because I was this fucking truck kid who couldn't even make his bed right, who went out and like did something. So he kind of started picking on me a little bit. And I thought it was like joking. And in retrospect, if I don't want to say if I'd done it today, but if a year and a half later, if the same thing had happened with that guy, I would have attacked him because I didn't really understand he was like disrespecting me. I don't know. I don't want to get in all this. So that was the first night though, all right?
You would have attacked him.
Yeah, a year and a half later, if he had spoken to me some of the ways he did, and like I thought he was just being like silly with me, you know what I mean? I would have like gotten his face because you don't speak to people the way he was speaking to me.
I speak to you horribly all the time. You never get in my face.
Yeah. Well, I've changed.
Do you ever think about shanking me?
All right. So that was the first night, right?
So what happened to the dude, the guy who got sent out of the cell?
Olsen? I don't know. I never saw him again.
No. The other guy. The guy Justin, who disrespected you. No, yeah, Olsen. What happened to him?
The guy who disrespected me? His name was Billy. I remember all their names, even though it's like I met so many other people, but just because it was the first time. Billy, first of all, he disrespected me once, and then one of the Mexicans was like, why you got to talk to Chris like that? And his name is Bam Bam from Alley Boys. I remember he was like shocked at this Mexican, because this other guy, Bam Bam, we would kick it all day. he was on the top bunk across from me, and he said something. And then, like, at that point, I understood, like, I needed to, like, not let him, like, joke with me in the way he was joking with me, you know? I don't know what happened to Billy. I saw
what you say to him.
I got transferred. I didn't say anything. I got transferred to a different facility, same classification, but it was like a newer facility that was a supermax where you're in like these glass cells and shit, right? And it's like a big room with like these different mods, and then like it'd be a snowed out bubble, and there's two people per cell, but it's pure plexiglass doors. And I could see Billy for months. He was totally across it, and he would give me this, like, the Hail Hitler fucking salute, and I'd just be like, whatever.
You hailed him back?
No, I give him, like, the peace sign. I'm like, I'm not gonna fucking do that, you know?
Hold on, though. When you're living in jail.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking...
I'm gonna get out in a year.
No, this was 6 months. I was thinking more that I needed to handle it well. I don't know. I wasn't depressed. The last time when I went in for a year, I got depressed. The first month, I was really sad. It was just because I'd already done it, and it wasn't like the nervousness about assimilating to it made it heightened by like.
It was anxiety. A new experience.
Or, yeah, I wasn't ever like doing time. It was mostly just like, I want to do this like well, you know. And then by the end, it was like I already got the deal. I knew what to do, and then I got depressed. I can still sign. You know that.
What is that?
It's hard for me to do it. I'm signing today. When you're in the glass cells, you speak with each other by just do the alphabet really, really fast.
You spell things out.
You spell things out, but so I can do it really fast.
Are prisoners like amazing spellers then?
Oh my God, they could do it so... you mean it actually
like written? Yeah, yeah, like do they spell everything right?
No, but one of my hustles was my dad would give me $50 a week for... and he wasn't very good about doing it every week for commissary, but one of my hustles later on was I wrote letters to the judge for people who were like illiterate. Do you know what I mean? Because you could write a letter and give it to
the
attorney.
How would they sign though if they're illiterate?
No, they weren't like they just were idiots. You know what I mean?
But I mean, like, let's say.
No. And this was in general population. The only time I had to sign was when I was in the higher classification because you're behind plexiglass doors. In general population, you're in like a barracks, like a big room. You know what I mean? It's different.
But I'm saying, like, how.
Dude, when I got put in the Supermax, you only had fucking. It's a Supermax design. You only had movement, right? Movement is how many people are in a room with seven people at a time. And they never had Mexicans and blacks or whites and blacks in the same room at the same time. So I was never in the same room. There was a group of black guys on the same tier as me in cells for 4 months, and I never talked to them once. And they never would actually open their cell and open my cell at the same time. And they would never let seven of us be in a room at the same time. That's how fucking they would lock it down. So anyways, I'll continue on before we get into other stuff. Later on, my first cellie was great. I actually wrote an article about him. I'm friends with his wife on Facebook. Real sad story. You're draining quick, so I'm not going to go into his.
No.
He was just an amazing dude, just a straight drug addict. He was fucking, like, ripped, covered in tattoos, but just a genuinely good person. And he had just done all this fucking time. He was 38, had spent 18 years in prison. And he was just like a junkie who, because it was California, anytime he had like the tiniest charge, he would get like these huge, huge sentences. So anyways, I got to know that guy like really well. And then he moved out and I got a new fucking cellie who was just this hothead kid named Eddie. And he knew how to make pruno, like hooch. And what he would do is you'd just like basically hoard fruit. It worked best with pears, and you'd let it like ferment or rot. And
were
then,
you so excited when you heard that this guy could make pruno? Was that like the most exciting thing that happened to you in jail?
Well, this was still the first time, so like I wasn't that like into. You know what it was like being a kid again. I wasn't that into like trying to get high as much as I was just like wanted to be like. Crazy. I just wanted to be like, it was more like having an identity as a.
You needed to be accepted.
Yeah, it was like being accepted and having an identity and like.
Having friends.
And then I learned from this experience with this kid, Eddie, that what I did was like a recipe for disaster. And like it could have got really, really bad. So Anyways, Eddie, we make the pruno. We get drunk a few times. You make it in your toilet and shit. And then Eddie tells me that one of his friends, who's doing like 10 years in prison's girlfriend, can get a happy card in. And this is the Binky thing. And so a happy card is a card sprayed with a bunch of meth. You can get like up to like almost an 8-ball on a card. And so...
On a card.
Yeah, they soak the card in like liquid, like meth mixed with water, and it soaks it up, and they send it in.
You're like, now you're speaking my language.
Yes, yeah, so fucking, I go to, my girlfriend would visit me on Saturday and Sunday, and you speak through the glass, and they monitor, you know, like the phones. So I write on a piece of paper, send, you know, $150 to this address, and we're talking on the phone, and I hold the paper up to the window, and she writes down the address, and so she mailed it. And so like a few weeks later, we got the happy card in. And so I'm with this kid, Eddie, who's pretty cool. He's from Anaheim, you know, a Puerto Rican dude who ran with the Southsiders. And I'm like, we end up fucking tweaking, right? And
He got meth in jail, were you like, this is my wheelhouse? Like, I understand this.
No, not really. I mean, I got it, and then tweaking in a cell, it was bad. We got a jailhouse syringe, which I used. I'm so fucking lucky I haven't contracted hepatitis C, or anything. I don't know how the fuck I've made it without doing that. The syringe itself, I've said this before, stop doing that, man. You really gotta stop and pay attention. You're just fading.
That's why I got coffee.
All right, good. Where was I?
You're tweaking in the cell with Eddie.
In the cell, yeah. So we got the fucking Binky and the syringe. A Binky is a syringe. It's literally the only part that's an actual syringe is the metal piece. It's a pen shaft, a piece of an Afro pick, elastic from shorts, a sandwich baggie, piece of a shower sandal. It's made into a syringe, which has probably been up anywhere from 3 to 10 people's anuses to be hidden when they do cell.
And yet searches. If I share your vape, you're crazy to fucking wipe the thing off.
So anyways, we fucking start tweaking, me and Eddie, in the cell, and fucking I'm talking to him. I have this huge fucking beard, and I say something like, on my mother's life, and his mother was dead and my mom's not, and like he just fucking snaps. And keep in mind, I am covered in staph. I had like the really bad staph infection. It was like going up my neck. It was all over my arms. These big open like scabs. And we fucking start fighting, right? And he ended up winning. He got me into like a headlock. And then we didn't like continue it. But after that whole thing with Eddie, I remember being like, this is like fucking dangerous. Like these people like are dangerous. Cause I just said something and he was like this cool, good dude. And he just fucking snapped.
And you know that if you could just say one thing that trigger, it's like the trigger of violent death.
Yeah. And it was like, holy, I just,
and you don't even know what you said. You just said something that you could just say casually.
Yeah. And he was super chill and it just activated some trauma.
He had to say something. He had to attack you.
It activated this fucking trauma. But I did, you know what's funny is we didn't square off like and just like duke it out. We like kind of went into like a wrestling thing and I picked him up and got him on his back. And then somehow he got his arm around my head and I kept on shaking. And finally he told me to stop. But I mean, my point is I just fucking scared. I was like, at that point, I was like, dude, I can't fucking be messing around with drugs like this because I don't know these people. And after that, I went to jail 2 more times after that.
As opposed to all the people you smoked crack with in the hotel rooms.
Yeah,
you knew that. You knew them so well. But you weren't locked into a horrible cell with them.
I wasn't locked into a cell with them. You know what's bad too is that I got out of jail and that girl had been visiting me. This is an older woman that I had told you about. I'd never had sex with her. We never slept together. And we hooked up and I got a gin. I was like, I had the staff on me. Like, dude, I can't like do anything. She like really wanted to. And so I saw a dermatologist and they'd started seeing me. And first of all, you're not supposed to, there's a button in the cell And there's buttons in the dorms and there's buttons in the cell, which calls the guards. And you never push. That's like the number one. Never push the button. If you push the button, you're going to get smashed by the guards. They're going to come beat the shit out of you. And the staff got so bad on me. And this was actually with Eddie. I was like, Eddie, like, I got to push the button. Like, this is so bad. I was like seeing the doctor and he was like, giving me like Neosporin and Advil. And it was literally like, and staff can kill you. It was like spreading everywhere. I was like, this is, I got to fucking see them. He's like, I think I'm going to push the button. And even Eddie was like, I don't know, man. Like, you never push the button. And I was like, fuck it. Like, I wasn't sleeping. I pushed it. And the second I pushed it, they're like, what the fuck do you want? Like, yelling at me on the thing. And I was like, I need to see the doctor. And it just clicks off. And then, like, a minute and a half later, the guard comes running down the tier and looks in it. The staff was so bad. He took one look at me. And he's like, we will get you to the doctor immediately. And walks away. And then I saw them. And the doctor... He just like shotgunned. He gave me like fucking like ketoconazole and like fucking, he just gave me everything. He gave me like antibiotics, steroids, like antifungal, which is like dangerous to do that. It started to get a little better. Anyways, I got out, hooked up with the chick. She contracted the staff that I had. And then the staff that she got was like antibiotic or like medication resistant, so like she had it like almost like it never like really got better, and like then mine went away.
It's the
and
gift I told that her keeps I should, giving.
Yeah. Oh, so the button. This woman I'm sorry, is this twisted. You just have another button story. So then, like 2 years later, I'm doing a 1 year sentence, and I'm in. They put me down to general pop, so I'm in regular dorms with like 150 people. You can play cards and talk on the phones and stuff like that. God, I have so many. I could literally do this for like three episodes. I have so many fucking crazy stories. One thing I'll say is I have never in my life laughed as hard as I've laughed in jail. I literally, the funniest shit I've ever seen in my life has been in jail. Like a deep, long belly laughs until like my abs were sore the next day. Because there's, it's not prison. You get some, like if you're in general population, you get like winos and crazy people and they're in there with like gang members. It's just like crazy shit happens. So there's this one kid in there. I don't know what his diagnosis was. He was fucking nuts, right? And he comes over. This was a couple years later. And I was in a cube with 12 people. But you can freely walk into the different cubes. It's like basically a gymnasium cut in half, right? And this kid – and the shot caller happened to be in my cube. There's like 12 cubes, and our cube had 12 people in this dorm. And so he comes in and he goes up to the shot caller. He's like – I'm so hungry. He's like, I'm going to push the button. And the button is in the middle of the room. And at this point, you're not supposed to go into the middle of the room. Like, the day room's closed. And people have given this kid food, but he's just, like, weird and crazy. And they're like... It's not even going to be that funny when I tell it. And the shot caller is kid Tyler. He's like, dude, he's like, yeah, he's like, no, you don't push the button. He's like, no, he's like, I'm so hungry. I'm going to like push the button. He's like, no, you don't push the button. And the kid's like, I really want to. And he's like, you know what? He's like, push the button. And so the kid walks out into the day room, right? And there's this bubble and there's 144 people or whatever in the side of the dorm. The bubble's blacked out, so you can't see anything. And they get on the loudspeaker and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? They're like, get back to your bunk. And he keeps walking over to the button. And they're literally like, do not push the button. They're just saying it over the loudspeaker. And he just keeps going. I'm like, I think he's going to push the button. They're like, do not push the button. And he goes up and literally he goes to touch it. And like the second he touches it, there's a door right next to it. They just swing it open and just beat the shit out of him.
He just needed a beating. He's like, push button for beating.
He wanted a fucking sandwich or something. He was hungry. There's other guys. So you would. I was kind of a dick too back then. There was this guy. I remember it was Steve Kotke. This was when I was in cell living, right? And he was like, there's these people who like kind of like. They're like Bible thumpers. They go to jail and they're praise Jesus, and then they leave and they're back in like 2 weeks, right? So this guy, Steve Kotke. And please keep in mind, I was a different human being back then. And he's kind of nuts. And for cell living, you would go get your tray and bring it back to your cell. And what happens is they pop your cell, like for like a few of you, like, you know, like seven of you, and you go get your trays and you come back to your cell. And then they pop like another seven or eight and they go down or whatever. And so if you wanted to, someone in your dorm, if you wanted to leave them like a bag, like a, you know, with some soups or something, you could leave it out. And then when they got their fucking meal, they could bring it back to their cell. So I go to get my tray, and I'm like, Steve! I like call him out. You know, he's in his plexiglass thing, and I put down a bag, right? And the guy had no extra food. You know, I had some money from commissary. Well, I just was like a dickhead, and so I put in the brown paper bag all my trash. So it was just like empty candy wrappers and like bullshit, right? And so I leave it out for him. And
why did you do that?
Because I was just a fucking dickhead. I don't know. I thought it was funny. I don't know. So
you left him garbage.
I left him
in jail.
I left him garbage, and I put it out, and he thinks it's like me leaving him soups and
why candy. Would you do that?
Because I was a dickhead. So he fucking goes. I'll tell you other shit for you. So he goes and gets his tray, and he picks up the bag, and he comes back to my cell, and he's like, God bless you, Chris. He's like, you have a heart of gold.
And what'd you think then?
I was like, I felt kind of bad, I think, when he said that. And so he goes back to his cell, and I can't see it, and he opens it up, and it's just garbage in his thing, right? And then, so Steve was very neurotic, right? And then he was like, you could fish, so what happens is a little crack underneath.
Wait, this was your second sentence?
This was my first sentence, actually. Okay. This is when I was trying to like make a name when I was doing crazy shit. But the other times I wouldn't do this stuff. I was like trying to be. I was shooting meth. I was just drinking hooch. I was doing crazy stuff. So fucking. You can also fish, and so what that means is you take your bed sheets, you cut them out, and you make these long strings. And sometimes people will put like a candy bar, and you just throw. There's like a little crack underneath your door, and you throw the line out. Which is like a bed sheet, you know, it's a string you made with maybe like a something tied to the end, like a maybe a baby powder thing, and you get it like hooked on it, and you gently pull it in. It's a way to like get stuff in the middle of the room if someone puts it out there. Or what you do is you shoot your line out, another cell shoots their line out, which is right down the tier, and you get them tangled, and then you can communicate with each cell. Are you following this?
Mm-hmm.
So I yell out, I'm like, Steve, shoot your line. So he like shoots his line out. I shoot my line out. We get him tangled. So this way we have this long piece of string that goes from cell to cell, and we can put notes on it and communicate with each other. And so Steve is like super high edge. He's probably like 45, 50, right? He's a meth user. It's kind of fucked up, some of his personal history. We've been in prison a bunch, but he's always like nervous about like what's going on, like what's the politics, you know what I mean? Like who's, you know.
Why'd you single out Steve so much?
Because Steve was just weird and crazy.
You just knew
I
you.
Was
just,
it was a whole fucking bully dynamic. I wasn't.
Steve was the one guy you could bully.
No, but he was like other people. You know what though? He fucking called somebody out. He actually ended up getting moved from our cell for fighting his celly. I was just like, I don't know. I was actually like kind of friends with him, but I just was like a dickhead. I don't know. I was a bad person at this period.
Are you friends with Steve on Facebook now?
He does not use Facebook, I'm sure. So fucking, anyways, I'm like, Steve, shoot your line, right? So he shoots at his line, and I was like, what was the first thing I said to him? I said, Steve, I was like, this is me and my Sally doing it. We're like, and he's super on edge and nervous. I'm like, Steve, I just want you to know people are talking, and that's all I put. And I sent the note back to him. And so and like you tug it, so notice he knows to pull it in, you know, so he pulls it in, and he's like, oh, I'm just picturing him in his cell, like, people are talking. Like, what does that mean? And so he sends it back, he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, and I write in the next one, I'm like, Steve, I'm like, can't talk. I'm like, people are watching. And so he gets it back, and then we just cut the line and pull it back in his cell, so he's just sitting in his cell all night, fucking terrified.
And Steve never got to exact revenge on you.
No, I guess before I went in, he tried to like force somebody to give him tobacco or something. It's so fucking, dude. There's literally 50 stories like this I can tell you just all night. And we were, I'll tell some more another time. We'll do a jail part two.
You're very lucky that you got out of it
in one piece.
That you got out of it at all,
dude. I got to get real for a second. So there's this, in no way a racist person or anything like that. And when I started spending more and more time, and I didn't spend a lot altogether. It's not even 2 years, you know?
It's 2 years. You'll never get back. It's a long time.
Yeah. But it's also not that long. But like, I remember specifically this one thing, and I was in them.
It's not that long compared to somebody that has 20 years or 30 years or their life.
Yeah,
it's long enough.
But I want to explain this one thing because it's like, you know me, I like all people, I'm a people pleaser and stuff like that. And I was in this desegregated dorm where there was blacks, Asians, Mexicans, Southsiders, and Paisanos, and the whites, the woods, and there's skinheads, comrades. And
Paisanos.
Paisanos. Those are like the border jumping Mexicans from Mexico. And they do their own thing. They make cheese under their bed. And
the cheese good?
Yeah, it's actually not bad. It tastes like feta cheese. And they're actually the fun. I play cards with them and stuff. What?
You're like, hey, Holmes.
They were all about trading. They always had nothing. Like, they had nobody putting money on their books, but they always had so much stuff because they were so, like, industrious, where they would just, like, wash people's clothes, and they just had all these hustles on the side. Anyways, I remember being in there, and when I was in the desegregated dorm and there was black people in there, if a black person like offers me some chips and I eat some chips, I'll get beat up by a white guy. There's no sharing with black people. There's no playing games with black people. So I wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? And actually, it's funny. One of the guys there who's in my cube actually with me would always like try to get me to play games because he knew like I didn't give a shit. Like I wasn't about that, you know? But I remember being in there and the brothers would – their card table was like near the bubble. And they would get really loud, and I remember being pissed, and I remember just saying, like, they are only, like, doing that because it's near the bubble, and, like, they know they're protected. But near the bubble is near the guards. I'm like, they know they're protected because the guards are close. And I remember the way I said they in my head, like, there was, like, it was racially charged.
It was the seeds of
hatred.
It was
fucking legit hatred, and I remember thinking that, and then I remember thinking, like, I can see how people get there. Do you know? Sure. And that first time, this was later on even, but that first time I was
there. You're living by this racist code.
Yeah. And then the first time being the stuff with Steven is like I started to get like concerned with respect. You know what I mean? It's like I think my MO, what I aspire to, the greatest human emotion is love. And it's like I can see how people who spend a lot of time in prison, fear and respect becomes a replacement for love, and they get from fear and respect what other people try to get from love. And
that's like a synthetic opiate.
It's like a synthetic opiate. And it's just like, I just can see how people get so lost up. And like, it's just so, I'm just so grateful, like, for my family and my parents. It's so funny. The first guy from those 2 weeks, Bam Bam, when I was making the cell, the guy from Alley Boys who like stood up for me that first time, he's like, you know what's going to be funny? This is what he said. He's like, you know what's going to be funny? He's like, you know, 10 years from now, he's like, I'm going to be, you know, at San Quentin or Folsom or Chino or some Pelican Bay or something. And he's like, and I'm just going to see Chris, and he's just going to be yoked out, sleeved up, tatted down, representing the woodpile or something. As he was basically saying, I was going to get turned out into like, you know, just get in, be about that life. And I could see how that could happen to somebody. Do you know what I mean? Because you just get broken off with these crazy amounts of time. And if I had kept that mentality that I had that first time that I was in jail and done a serious sentence and not had people who had loved me, I would have become a product of the system and I could have turned into something like that.
Some uber prisoner. Uber fucking white prisoner.
Yeah.
What does a nice Jewish boy do if they're in jail? They join up with the white supremacists?
I actually don't remember any Jewish guys in there. There must have been some.
Do they shave their head and talk Spanish and pretend they're Serenios?
There actually is Woodsiders. So if you're black, there's no like white people who run with the blacks, but there's white people who run with the Serenios, the Southsiders. They call them Woodsiders. And it's so weird. They'll come in and they'll be like white, and you'll be like, hey, what's up, dude? And they'll be like, orale, homie. Like, they'll speak because they grew up in the barrio. They grew up, like, in, like, a Mexican neighborhood, and all their friends were Mexican. And when they go to jail, they run with the Mexicans. And so the Mexicans will let that happen. They'll allow. Because
they know who's who.
Yeah, and then the Mexican will allow, like, I have so many. I could tell you Woodsider stories, too, for days.
It's a miracle that that your life got better. And it's a miracle that I never had to go to a place like that. Like, I did.
Oh, my. If you had to go to Rikers, dude, Rikers. So, yeah, there's crazy racial shit and these crazy stories from Orange County. Rikers is just fucking different, though. It's like, from what I understand, I haven't been there. You're so lucky, Todd, never ended up doing real time.
Todd did time at Rikers. He's got some crazy stories.
Did he?
Yeah. The stories that he would tell, like, I didn't even believe them.
I think it's just a shithole, too. It's just, like, very crappy.
I never like, made it past Central Booking.
Yeah, you were in the like tomb. Substations and shit, yeah.
In central booking, but I, you know, like, and it felt like jail enough to me. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That was as close as I ever wanted to come to jail, and like, so I'm so fucking lucky that it never got past there. But and I don't know what the fuck would happen. You know, was there?
You do fine. So this is what it is. It's basically fucking high school, popularity contest with an edge. There's just a violent edge. And whatever your strong suit is you can play up to it. I mean, like, towards the end, I'd just be sort of quiet and read a lot. But I was always, like the funny guy. Actually, in the dorms, they had... So there was just a shot caller for, like, the higher security stuff. But in the general population with the dorms, there was these different roles. There was a shot caller for every race. Then there was a right hand, like, for every race. Think, like, vice president. Then there was a house mouse for every race. And then there was...
What's the house mouse?
The house mouse is the guy who, like, helps clean the dorm and shit like that. And, like, he, like, new fish come in.
He tells scurries them the around deals. And gets shit together.
Yeah, it's, like, it's actually... I mean, it's, like... Yeah, it's definitely not a respectable thing, but it's also, like, a good position it could be to have. But they actually... Anyways, so this shit went down, and they asked me. They're, like, Chris, like, this old guy, Red, was the shot caller. He's, like, Chris, you're going to be the right hand. And I was, like, no, like, I can't. And he's, like, oh, yeah, it's an hour. Well, should we wrap it up? Let's... How about this? If you want to hear... Jail Stories Part 2, I can do it.
Because no, we're going to do it.
Could do another hour on this.
We're going to do Jail Stories Part 2.
But fucking write a review, why don't you?
We're supposed to read an email.
I didn't even find one. Should we do an email?
You do the one...
Oh, shit. What's her name emailed?
Who?
Laura Victoria Albert.
Who's that?
J.R. Whatever.
Who?
She said when. The person we were going to have on the show, J.T. Leroy.
Now.
We can't ever call it. She said just posted about it. What the fuck does that mean?
Just chill out. Hold on. Pause it. Just pause it, please.
Oh, hold on. All right. Hit it up, homie.
Did you ever think about writing a book about it?
What do you mean? I wrote an article for Salon.
Did you write about this stuff?
Yeah.
What'd you write about?
I wrote about all. It's a whole article about my first cellmate, Mike, the guy who was a really good dude in his situation.
Justin Schlegs?
No, not Krause. It was his name's Mike. The guy who was a really good dude. He spent 18 years in prison. I just wrote about his life and what the situation was and what a spoiled brat I am.
You didn't tell the story about the time you roughed up the Asian guy.
Oh, I didn't. That'll be Jail Stories Part 2.
Yeah. I'm going to read an email, and we're going to be done. This is an email that we got from some Canadian guy or girl. Is it a guy or a girl named Sylvain?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Have
Sylvain?
I heard this one? I don't even know if I've heard it.
Yes. Ow. Are you a guy or a girl? I'm reading this in honor of my father, who thought this was really funny. Hi, guys. First of all, thanks for your show. The way you talk about drugs is hands down the most candid I've heard. You don't hide the bad, but you are not preaching or admonishing. Your tone is fresh. It's a novel way to truthfully describe what living with addiction is about. The stories themselves are enough for anyone to understand addiction is a terrible thing. Just like you say in your podcast description, it really is a dark comedy. One thing I really love about the show is that you turn several common beliefs about addiction on their heads. I will elaborate on one of these only, namely, addiction fries your brains. I was seriously convinced that the amount of drugs you both used would have cut your IQ down by at least half. I thought multi-addicts, after even just a few years of constant use, ended up communicating with a couple hundred words, half of them curses, or drug-related. A dozen hand gestures and grunts. In particular, I thought crack use, even in small amounts, would badly deteriorate your brain. You both proved me so wrong. You guys are extremely articulate, way, way over the average of even non-users. You really do not expect a multi-addict or ex-multi-addict's vocabulary to be so rich as to include words like pristine, reiterate, and platitudes.
What about turpitude?
On a side note, Dave's dad use of the word turpitudes brought me great joy. Dispelling myths is an important task for the general public to understand the reality of drug use. Your podcast does that really well. Keep it up. Love you guys. Sylvain.
Nice.
Would you say Sylvain is a man or a woman?
I think it's Sylvini.
Why would you say that?
Because she's Italian.
You think it's an Italian woman from Toronto?
I think it's... I don't know what it... Man.
I think your jail stories are incredibly scary and crazy to know you. And also to know, like... We're sitting in one of your parents' houses, you know what I mean? And you're talking about being covered with staph infection or the time that the Nazi sent you to go beat up the fucking old other Nazis.
When I went to go fucking see the dermatologist after I got out of jail with the staph infection. The dermatologist was like, can I please get a picture of you for my records? He's like, this is really bad.
But that must have given you street cred, too. Anything really bad that happened to you in there, it was probably good in some way.
Well, it created this huge thing because I used a syringe and I had staph. And then there people were like, he has staph, he used a syringe. And I was like, it's external, it's internal, it's okay or something.
Well...
Oh, my God, dude. I didn't want to get into this. It's taking a lot out of me talking these stories and getting into it without succumbing to...
To what?
Well, I wanted to say it was, like, exciting, you know. I felt like I got into it, but it's just a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
I didn't even start. There's so many fucking stories. Time I got taxed, shut the whole fucking... Literally nobody for the entire day could take a shower or use the day room because...
I remember that story because you had somebody stay in your bed.
Yeah, we'll tell that in part two. I had somebody stay in my bed. I was on lockdown, and I had somebody pretend to be on my bunk so I could go out and use the day room, and they figured out what I was doing, and it got bad.
I think the dark comedy of prison could be a great podcast.
Oh, my God. You could do a great podcast with prisoners. And think of the all the shit I have in such a short period, but like... Oh my God, that kid Eddie, if he could tell stories. He went at the... Oh, it was crazy, dude. Crazy stuff.
Yeah. All right.
It was exciting. That's the thing. Is I'm a total... I'm just addicted to the edge. So there was this fucking undercurrent of just like insanity that was like addictive almost in there.
And not to mention...
The riots were like fun. I like wanted it to pop off.
It's very, very, very similar to drugs themselves for a sheltered person. It's like... All of a sudden, what you're doing is real, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's these things that you only saw on TV or in movies or in books, and all of a sudden it's in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a very short-sighted, immature way to look at it, but I can imagine, like, that having some sort of allure.
Yeah.
Like, because you're part of something, like, that's way out of your depth, and it's now it's your depth.
Yeah.
You know, it's transformative, and it's scary.
Yeah.
But we'll do a part two.
Well, email us if you want a part two. I'm not going to do it unless people email us. Or write a review.
Write a positive review of Chris's incredible prison stories.
Okay, that's it.
All right, stay strong,
Dopey Nation. Stay strong, Dopey Nation.
I want to take a walk.
All right, that's the end of episode 67. And I think it clipped before Chris could even say toodles. And Chris used to put these episodes together, so it wasn't even me that made it so Chris couldn't say toodles. And there's so much good stuff in there, and it just makes me miss Chris. We did some animations of his brawls in prison and just... It's amazing to hear all the stuff that Chris went through and all the stuff that made Chris who he was. And I know he was very proud of his experiences in prison, and you could hear it in the way he told it. And he was just such an incredible person. And Dopey would not, I mean, obviously Dopey would not exist without him. It would not be anything like it is even without him if he hadn't been in it. And I love him and I miss him. And, I'm honored to still be making the show that we started together. So send in all your thoughts. Be kind to me. This is a long time ago when I was in very early recovery. And stay strong, my brothers and sisters, in and out of recovery, and fucking toodles for Chris.
I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder would it do me any good? Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And I want to take a ride up in the sky. Watch as aeroplanes just pass me by.
And I wanna see a Lear jetliner take a dive, just to show all of these people what it means to be alive. But I wanna be good so bad. Wanna be so good, so bad, so bad. I wanna be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had.